Blog Talk
Hello?
Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host of Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Today we have on with us Shahid Omar, a longtime advocate and voice for the incarcerated. Omar is a reentry expert with a master's degree in criminal justice, and he has been actively working with prisoners in a few states, although primarily in the state of Virginia. Shahid played a major role in his advocacy work in 2005 police brutalities, which he will be discussing, as well as the grant scams, as well as speaking out on behalf of the incarcerated individuals, and not only to speak out on their behalf, but to also share their voices through their own writings. So let's welcome Shahid Omar from the state of Virginia, sharing his
Hello.
Experience.
Hello.
His journey.
Salam alaikum. How y'all doing? All right. Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
Shahid, are you on with us?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
Okay. How are you?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I'm sorry. We got a bad connection. Can you hear me now?
I can't hear you. You hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you good. Phone's breaking up a little bit.
Yeah. Do you want to tell the other little bit?
Let me step outside. See if it help us in it. Hold on. Don't go nowhere. I'm going to step outside. You hear me now?
We can hear
Leona.
You fine.
Hold
can
on
you hear us?
Yeah, I hear you good.
Well, if you can hear me, I can hear you. So why don't we get started on the show?
Sounds good to me.
We can hear you. You sound very
right.
good, and I'm sure if you can hear me, we're all set.
Okay.
So do you want to introduce yourself now and just talk a little bit about some of the things that you've been doing throughout your years of advocacy work with the prisoners?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm starting this organization. I've been doing this work since 2004 to some degree in dealing with the abuse of inmates in Virginia. But actually, my work started back in 77 when I got out of prison in 75. And in 77, I started working for an organization called TAP, T-A-P, which means Total Action Against Poverty. And we worked with ex-offenders and inmates. And then we started an organization called Virginia Cares, which is and was a statewide pre- and post-release program. Today's language is called reentry, but back in the late 70s and early 80s, you didn't hear the word reentry, you heard the word transition. So we started that program called Virginia Cares and worked with prisoners and ex-offenders. And since then, in 2000, and I went to school, got a master's degree in 85, and since I've been working with inmates, I'm starting finally decided to get an organization. After all these years not working with an organization, I finally decided to get an organization of my own, and it's called All Inmates Lives Matter. And right now I'm in the process of getting a 501(c). We had a march yesterday. We had a demonstration yesterday around the federal building. Can you hear me, Leona?
Yes, how was it?
Good. Well, it was good in the sense that it was our first one, and we didn't have but a couple. One guy show up and help me. He's my partner. And so we was there, and it was somewhat exciting because people that worked in the federal building, they came outside to see what we was doing. And I got one sign that says, Federal Judge Pamela Sargent is a racist. And when they saw that one, they got on the telephone. They called somebody. I don't know who they were calling. They might have been calling her. They were calling somebody. I found it to be very strange not long after that, some white boy pulled up in a truck, told both of us that he killed both of us. And, of course, I thought he was a little tipsy. I didn't know. But I told him he was pulling ass and get out of the truck. And so he took off. The mistake I made is I didn't take a picture of his tag number. I thought I remembered it, but I remembered it wrong. But anyway, you know, that's what happened. You know, we stayed there and we stayed there for 2 hours yesterday, and we're going back again this week. So we're going to be there every week until the federal judiciary begins to do what they're supposed to do. And in Virginia, I don't know about the rest of the country, but in Virginia, when an inmate files a suit, it goes to the federal judiciary, goes to the federal judges. First, it goes to the federal magistrate, and then she decides whether or not it goes anywhere else. And the magistrate, you know, it's real strange because they have the opportunity to decide whether or not your claims, your civil suit is going anywhere else. And most of the time, what they do, they look at some of your claims. And depending upon who they are and how they feel about what you're doing, they allow some of your claims to go to court, and some they deny. And it's real strange because one magistrate lives in the same city, the same county, as the prison is. And the stuff that she allows to come to the court, you know, is really not good. And for an example, like some of the inmates are being beat up, and their camera catches the officers beating them up. She doesn't allow the cameras to come to court, you know. So if the cameras are not allowed to come to the court, then how do the jurors see what happened to the inmate? They have to they see what happened based on the inmate's word, and they don't believe that. So it's a real problem, and that's why we are protesting against the federal judiciary and what they're doing.
Can I speak on that for a minute? That mm-hmm. happened in Massachusetts, too. A prisoner filed a lawsuit against not only the former commissioner, but some of the other officials. The mm-hmm. The former commissioner worked for the courts prior to becoming the commissioner. He had worked for the mm-hmm. courts for 12 or 14 years, so the judges mm-hmm. all knew him. And when that prisoner went in with all his confirmed, documented evidence, everything, the judge allowed him to say so much, and he never even got to present all his documentation, all his transcripts, all his evidence. So I believe what you're saying about that, because the connections, it depends on mm-hmm. who they know at the time. I just wanted to bring that up because that you mentioned you don't know if it happens in other states. It does.
Exactly. And one of the other things that happens, Leona, is that inmates sometimes take a settlement. And when they take a settlement, what that means is that they have been offered $3,000 or $4,000. Even to a state inmate who's full of time, $3,000 or $4,000 is like $3-4 million. And what happens is that once they decide to take a settlement, they can't talk about the case no more. So the public doesn't get a chance to hear what happened to the inmate because the inmate took a settlement. The news reporter that's in the courtroom can't report on it. The people who are in the courtroom to write about it from the newspaper, they can't report on it. The cameras can't take no pictures because the inmate took a settlement. And so what we're trying to do is appeal to the inmates, don't take no settlement. Because once you take a settlement, the public doesn't know what happened to you. And once we get that done, we'll begin to hear some cases about inmates being beat up. Right now, the police is the only one that's being filmed, and the public hear about that. But what happens in the system to inmates, public doesn't know anything about it. So when you start talking about inmates getting beat up, public look at you like you crazy. They ain't heard nothing about that.
That's a shame. And a lot of times they move the prisoners to an area where there's no camera.
That's right. That's right.
So tell us about the 2005 police brutality role that you played back then when all of this was going on. And tell us a little bit about that brutality, because I don't remember hearing about that.
Well, 2005 to 2009, I walked the streets of Roanoke because a young boy who was a friend of
a lady that I know got shot by the police. And they use the same excuses they use now when the police shoot somebody. They always say the person had a gun and the person was shooting at them, et cetera. Well, they said this young boy had a gun and they was chasing him, and it was some kind of drug deal that went bad, so the police was chasing him, and the police shot him and killed him. Well, I went to city council, and I spoke on it, and I said that the police was acting just like the Ku Klux Klan. The only thing different was they had on blue uniforms and was allowed to carry the guns they were doing, the guns that they were carrying. Well, the police sued me. So police sued me. But before I get to that, let me talk about what I was doing in the community. I went to every project, low-income projects in the city, about four of them. I went on every, knocked on every door, passed out leaflets about this one police who shot this guy. And because he was known in the community as being a cowboy. And so, my nephew first one told me about it. My nephew moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, from Virginia. And one day we was talking, and I asked him why come he moved. He told me that the police was in this town. The police was bothering him. Every time the police saw him, they would stop him because he had a pretty car, and they thought he was selling drugs. He wasn't selling. They weren't selling no drugs. His grandma was my sister, and she had money. And so she was a private business lady, and between her mama, not her mama, between her daughter, my nephew's mother, they got him a pretty car. But he said the police would stop him all the time and mess with him, so he moved out of town. So that's the first time I heard about this police. Well, anyway, I went to all the projects in the city and passed out flyers about this police and asked people that know him. You know, when I went to city council to speak, the police sued me. And the NAACP said that I defamed his character because I called him a Klansman. Well, I looked for a lawyer. Went to the NAACP, went to the SCLC, and neither one of those organizations would come forward and represent me. But the organization out of another part of Virginia called Charlottesville, they came, stepped forward, and told me they were going to give me some money and hire me a lawyer, and they did. And a lawyer was actually from out of Roanoke, and he represented me. We went to lower court, and, of course, the lower court judge agreed with the police and found me guilty. Well, we appealed the case and went to higher court, and the higher court, he couldn't win. He didn't win because of my First Amendment right to say what I wanted to say, you know, and I did. And I was found innocent. I worked in police brutality for 5 years by myself in Roanoke. And if that case would have happened during this time in this country, I would have been on the news all across the country. But I wasn't on the news. They did little bit of news in this town, you know, but. This is a small town I live in, Roanoke, Virginia. It's not a big town, and so to get new people to come out and look at what you're doing, it's kind of difficult to do. Like yesterday, prior to yesterday, a couple of weeks ago, we were supposed to have a demonstration called the Rain Quarters, but I invited all the television. News people to come out and see what we was doing. The three newspapers, I invited them. And nobody showed up. And
you know,
so
I'd like to say something on that too, Shahid, if you don't mind, real quickly.
Say it again.
I'd like to say something on that before
yeah,
you go
ahead.
On.
Mm-hmm.
The media and the NAACP, I'm going to add them,
mm-hmm.
they can prevent so many people from getting killed if they would cooperate with people like yourself that are really motivated to try to stop it before it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I remember three cases in Pennsylvania in 2007, three people alleged to have committed suicide, all at the same, within a 3-month period, all in the same hole in the prison in Smithfield,
mm-hmm.
SCI Smithfield. I contacted the NAACP. I contacted some of the legislative members. I contacted ACLU. And it wasn't until the third prisoner died that Senator Leanna Washington went before the media and said that if she had known about it, she would have done something. And I had emailed that woman because she was one of the people that I had contacted so many times. And I still have emails and I still have information where I try to contact her. And then she said she was going to send in to have it investigated. If these people would listen in the first place, a lot of prisoners and people in the communities would not be dead today.
That's right.
I had contacted them on cases where they needed to be available to prisoners that were being abused. And they all they say is they don't have the funds, they don't have the staff every single time.
Right.
And I've been advocating for 20 years now. The media should have been at that place, but the media will report something if there happens to be a prisoner assaulting a guard or a
person in the community.
When these
black men
are killed by the police, the first thing the media usually does is bring up the past of the person that they killed. Instead of reporting police doing it. And that makes me really furious.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Yep, the NAACP wouldn't touch my case. And think about this. I'm being sued by our police because I spoke to city council and spoke out against him shooting this black guy. And then NAACP wouldn't take my case. I mean, they could have hired me a lawyer. The SCLC, same thing, could have hired me a lawyer. And neither one of these people would take my case. It took an organization from outside the town that I live in to hire me a lawyer. NAACP wouldn't touch it. You know, the news media, right now, I have five news reporters name and address on a sheet of paper that I send to all prisoners. Every time an inmate writes me about his case, about being abused, I send the inmate these reporters' names. I also send the reporter a copy of the letter that the inmate sends me and ask the reporter to write about this, because if the media reports on what's going on in the prison system like they do with the police being beat up, this stuff will stop overnight. Once the prison system knows that the media is going to report on the inmate being beat up or being assaulted or not being fed, not getting showers, not getting recreation, they're going to stop doing what they're doing. But if they know that behind closed doors that they can do what they want to do, then they're going to keep on doing it. It takes the media to report on what they're doing in order for it to stop. You know,
That's right.
I'm doing everything I can do to contact the media. Every time I get a letter from an inmate, I'm contacting the media, and we have some people in Virginia that has reported on some cases, but no cases. It's real strange because they will report on things like inmate, like what you said, like an inmate jumps on an officer, they will report on that. But officers beating inmates, brutality, inmates not getting fed proper food or not getting fed food at all, a lot of inmates go on hunger strikes, thinking that if they go on a hunger strike, that somebody's going to hear about it and have some effect on what they're going through. Well, in Virginia, it doesn't work. In Virginia, it doesn't work because it's not reported to the public. So if you're a prisoner and you're on a hunger strike and nobody knows you're on a hunger strike, the only thing you're doing is you're starving yourself, because don't nobody know you're on a hunger strike except somebody like me. I know you're on a hunger strike, but I don't have the power to make the news media write about it. It's simple as that. You know, so you just starving yourself. And so I always tell the inmates, don't go on a hunger strike in Virginia. If you go on a hunger strike in Virginia, you're going to starve yourself. And you're not going to get into publicity because ain't nobody going to write about it. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. The media. The problem with the media is you never hear anything about them or any of their relatives going to jail, going to court, or anything like that. And I think they want to keep it that way, and that's why they don't report against the law enforcement or prison officials or guards, because they want to stay on the good side of what's going to keep them on the outside.
Yep, yep. That's correct. That's correct. That's correct. You know, and I have some letters from some inmates that I can put my hands on. I like to read a couple of these letters.
I'd love to hear from them.
Yeah,
they need a voice.
Well, these are the letters that inmates write about the abuse that they're going through. Listen to this right here. The following pages are summaries and witness statements of the brutal beating and attempt on my life. This is March 3rd, 2015, here at Red Onion State Prison. Red Onion is a supermax prison in Virginia. Matter of fact, it's the only supermax. There was another supermax. And supermax means that you stay locked down in your cell 23 hours a day. You let out 1 hour a day. 23 hours you're locked down in your cell. That's what supermax means. To think about that, 23 hours out of a day you're locked in your cell with no human interaction with nobody. No, you don't come out your cell. You're not out your cell. They had a program on Dateline last night. One of the famous Dateline reporters went to a prison in Louisiana and spent a couple of days. And this thing is going to happen. It's going to happen. And when I mean it's going to happen, the reporting on prisoners and prison life is going to come. It's time for it to come to the public. The same way the police brutality is happening there and people know about it, prison brutality is going, prison life is going to come to the public. It's called mass incarceration. You got so many people that's locked up in prison doing time. And I heard these guys on TV last night, they've been locked up 50 years. One guy locked up 55 years. One guy locked up 61 years. And it's real sad. One guy died. He's in hospice, cancer. Been locked up 55 years, you know. Never going to get out. I mean, locked up 55 years. And the guy sitting there, he's been locked up longer than the age of the reporter. The reporter wasn't as old as this guy. He's been locked up 55 years. And he said he's sorry for what he did, but he's been locked up 55 years. No parole. In Virginia, there's no parole. Even though we have a governor now who's a Democrat and can bring back parole, he's scared to death because every time the word come out of his mouth, parole, all the Republicans started talking about ain't going to be no parole. And so he comes against them. The Republicans come against him, and he quiets down. Even though the majority of the legislators in Virginia right now are Democrats, you know, and so he can actually bring back parole if he don't be scared. But ain't no parole. So, you know, and no parole, you're going to be locked up 85% of your time you're going to do in prison. My son
did
18 years.
Most of these men and women, a lot of them when they were under the age of 25, they didn't have a chance to even have a life. And then to spend all those years, and even if they got out, they probably wouldn't survive very long. But if he's been in for 55 years, then he probably went in when he was under 25, and where does his life go? He never had a life. People make
right.
mistakes.
Other
people use that mistake to take out vengeance, retaliation, you know, and it's sad. It's really sad.
Yeah, you got a lot of these people went in when they were 16, 17 years old. you got a lot of juveniles, people that went in that juvenile, and they're still there. They're there when they're 16, 17 years old, and they're still locked up.
You know, there's a reporter. Someone had sent me, his name is Ted Daniels. He's with Fox 25 News. And his phone number is 781-708-1468. And he's supposed to be in the investigative unit at Fox 25. And yet, none of this is ever reported. People have contacted him because since he is in the investigative unit, you would think that he'd be interested in some of these issues. But he does nothing with it. And I think that people should now start to get the numbers and the names, the email addresses or whatever of these news reporters that claim to be investigative divisions, or even to get information, should contact these people and let them know that they're dissatisfied with them just reporting one-sided stories or one side of the fence instead of reporting everything that goes on.
Yeah. Well, we had the same situation in Virginia. And people call themselves investigative reporters. But at the same time, they have the authority to write on what they want to write on. If they want to write on your case, they want to write on the case of inmates being beat up, you don't have to write on it. So you have to find somebody. You know, it's almost like finding somebody personally that wants to write on a case that's about inmates being beat up. If they don't want to write on them, they don't have to write on them. So,
but then they respond.
Every now and then, you find some news reporter who will step forward and write about a case. Listen, I got newspaper, Richmond Times Dispatch newspaper, Mr. Patrick Wilson, Tim Eberle, investigative reporter for Virginia Pilot newspaper, Teresa Bargrass out of Washington D.C., writes for the Washington Post. Frank Green, reporter from out of Richmond Times Dispatch in Richmond, Virginia. These people supposed to write about prisoners all the time. But again, what they want to write about is depends on their personal decisions. And most of the time, they don't write about cases that you think they should write about. And so if they don't write about the case, the public doesn't know anything about it.
Exactly. Exactly.
I get letters from inmates every day about cases that are going to federal court. It's a lot of work. But Allah has blessed me to have some people step forward. And I got a friend of mine, his name is Fahim. Every couple weeks out of a month, he'll call me. He'll come by my house and he'll bring me 200 stamps. Think about that, 200 stamps. And they'll last me for a whole month or more. And anytime I need him do anything for me, he'll do it.
I'd like to ask you real quickly, too, if you can, Shahid, give the audience a contact information for you in case they want to volunteer or if they want to help with stamps or writing paper, anything. Give them your contact.
First of all, my name is Shahid Omar, and that's spelled S-H-A-H-E-E-D. My last name is Omar, O-M-A-R. My address is 927 Wasena, W-A-S-E-N-A, Avenue Southwest, Suite 2. That's Roanoke, Virginia. That's Roanoke. My zip code is 24. I'm sorry. Say it again.
There was a hesitation in your information that you were giving, and so it wasn't coming out.
927 Wasena. W A S E N A. Avenue Southwest, Suite 2. And that's Roanoke. That's Roanoke, Virginia. 24015, the zip code. Telephone number. My telephone number is available to all prisoners. They can call me collect. My number is 540-309-2473.
Do you have an email address?
My email address is Shahid, E-E-D, Omar, O-M-A-R, 69, at yahoo.com.
Okay.
Again, that's Shahid Omar, 69, at yahoo.com.
So getting back to the media on other things too, what are your thoughts on, I understand Globaltel and Securus are now the two main contracted phone companies with the prison system nationwide. What I recently learned, and you may have seen it as well on Facebook, Omar Shahid, is some of Securus is charging fees, $3 fees, every time you put money on an inmate's account. In some places, in other places, they're not charging at all. In some places, they're charging for emails. In other places, they're not. All of these things, to me, it seems like it's very shaky and it's very inconsistent and it's not right because a lot of prisoners can't afford it in the beginning. And their families are up here paying all kinds of fees to put money on the account. It's maybe $25. You have to pay a $3 fee to put money, $25, on an inmate's account. But all over Facebook, they've been talking about it recently. And one lady actually said she's going to start a database where she's going to be putting all this into a data to see what states are charging and which states aren't, who's being charged and the amounts that they're being charged. And I encourage everyone from their states to try to get that information to her, or to try to do the same with their states. And then at the end, when we have all this calculated, all this on a sheet, to contact the Attorney General's office in every state to make sure that something is done about these fees. Prisoners should not have to be especially during this pandemic.
Yeah, that's interesting because I've not heard about any problem like that in Virginia. I'm pretty sure there are some, but it's just one end of the complaints that I haven't heard too much about.
Well, since the two free calls a week that some places in some states are charging, I mean, are affording the prisoners, other states are not. But in those states where they're allowing the two free calls a week, and some are getting three free calls a week, and some have been getting all free calls a week, but during those times, those calls are intercepted or they're interrupted or just cut off, and the prisoner has to call back a second time. These prisoners, as you mentioned earlier, are stuck in those cells 22 and 23 hours a day. So they have 1 or 2 hours out of their cells to make phone calls, to take their showers, to do whatever they have to do. And when they make those free phone calls, and get disconnected and have to call back, they're calling back on a paid phone call. So these are some of the other issues that are out there.
One of the issues that we deal with in Virginia, as far as the phone is concerned, is the gang members taking over the power of who can make a phone call. And there's some violence that's being perpetuated by gang members at the prison that I work in, not work in, but communicate with prisoners, Red Onion and Wallens Ridge. Wallens Ridge used to be a Supermax prison also. It's no longer Supermax as far as the security level is concerned, but it is Supermax as far as the culture is concerned. And one of the problems that they have is gang members controlling who makes the phone call. And so if you're not a gang member and you decide you don't make a phone call, regardless of what somebody standing over top, standing there at the phone, controlling who makes the phone call, that's violence, and it takes place. And one of the things that we're proposing in Virginia and we're fighting hard to get done is stopping the violence between inmates, especially gang members. You know, gang members in this city, I don't know about any other city, but it's a big problem in Virginia. And right now in my hometown, we're having reports of young boys in gangs in the broad daylight killing folks. McDonald's 2 o'clock in the evening, 2 or 3 days ago, young boys shooting each other. And so the same thing goes on in the prison system, except ain't no guns involved, but there are knives involved. And so these people affiliating themselves with gangs for different reasons, for various reasons, and it causing a lot of problems in the system. We were trying to end it. You know, the sad thing is, like, in Red Onion State Prison, you got gang members that's actually working with the officers. Inmates will file a complaint against the officer. Officer will call the inmate who filed a complaint a snitcher because he filed a complaint. He will hire a gang member to jump on the other inmate by giving him some extra cigarettes, or giving him some marijuana, or giving him some extra food. But gang members working with the officers, and so we'll come against that. We have a program. We have a radio program in Virginia called Holler to the Hood. It's actually in Kentucky, but the program comes in Virginia also. And so you can call on this program called Holler to the Hood, and you can talk to inmates on Monday nights from 8 to 9. And the program's been in operation for at least 15 years. And so every Monday night from 8 to 9, you can call the number, and you can get the number from Google, Holler to the Hood. And you can talk to inmates, and they will listen to you on the radio. And so every Monday night I call in, and I tell the inmates, you know, I love them. And I'm working for them. I give them my telephone number and my address, and let them know they can write me. They can call me, collect if they need to. And also the officers are listening also. So I talk to them also. I talk to the gang members and tell them they ain't got no business working for the officers. They shouldn't be working for the officers, you know, for a cigarette or some marijuana or extra meals. Because they're beating the other inmates up. You know, an inmate who don't belong to a gang, most of the time, if he's not a Muslim, he ain't got nobody to help him. So he by himself and got no help. So he has to do what the gang members tell him to do. And it's real sad because it's a reality in the system, gang members. And I'm probably one of the only few people in the country that ain't afraid to speak out against them. I just wrote the mayor of the city in Roanoke, the black mayor, chief of police, black chief, and judge, the chief judge in the city, African-American. I just wrote them a letter the other day about the gang members in Roanoke, in my city, and told them if they're 15, 14 years old in this city right here, they're not forced to be gang members. In Chicago, in New York, Miami, different big cities, California, there may be some force behind a young boy being a gang member. But in this city right here, if you're a gang member, you're a gang member by choice. And if you got enough nerve to carry a gun and shoot somebody in broad daylight public, you need to be locked up. And so I told them that, lock them up, because they're endangering people's lives. In broad daylight, man, think about that. You at McDonald's, and the McDonald's building, McDonald's restaurant is sprayed with bullets because there's a guy inside who you want to kill, and instead of going inside and kill him, you spray the whole building with bullets. So I say lock them up. Lock them up. They ain't got no business on the street. Lock them up, you know, because they're endangering the... Yeah, it's crazy. They're endangering the people's lives. You know, I don't have no problem telling them lock them up. You know, I don't care. Don't lock them up.
I wish these gang members, I wish they would turn their. I mean, it's good to be in a gang if you're doing good, but to be in a gang when you're doing bad, and that's the problem we have with the law enforcement and also prison officials and guards. They're gangs. They're simply gang members, and they're doing a lot of damage out there in the communities and in the prison. There's some good ones. There's a lot of good law enforcement and good prison officials and guards, but they're not speaking up. They're not exposing. You know, Sherry Sweeney from the Patrick Crusade, her husband was a police officer in Alabama, Patrick Sweeney. He exposed his peers. He exposed them for the drugs they were doing. He exposed them for the abuses they were doing, and he ended up getting set up and sent to prison. He died about 11 years ago of a heart attack, but being in prison all those years for being honest and exposing the corruption and the deception and the lies and the abuses. But the thing is, more people in law enforcement were to speak up against their brothers, as they call them, even in the prisons, there would be so many prison people, good people in law enforcement and in prison that would not be getting killed. So if the bad ones don't care about the good ones, why should the good ones protect the bad ones? I don't understand it at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, they got codes, police, forces, correctional officers. They got certain codes that they go by, they live by, and they live like what you said, like they call them, they gang members. So when they go in and accept this job, they agree not to what they call snitch, not to tell on an officer who's doing something wrong. They just agree on it by taking the job. And it's crazy because the officer that's doing something illegal is jeopardizing your job.
Exactly.
If you are a police and you work on a force where there are other police that's breaking the law, they jeopardizing your job. Because in the public, when we come against the police, we don't just come against the bad police, we come against police period. In the prison system, when we come against correctional officers, we don't just come against the bad correctional officers. We say correctional officers. So if you ain't speaking up, that's one of the things that people in the news are saying now. Silence is not good. So if you're a white person and you're not a racist, you have to speak up against those who are racist. If you're a police officer and you're not a bad police officer, you got to speak up against those who are bad. If you're a correctional officer and you're not a bad correctional officer, you go to work every day and you do your job and you treat people like human beings and you treat people good, even though they're pulling time and they broke their law, if you treat people good, you got to speak up against those who are treating people bad. And that is what is happening right now in the world. You got to take a position. You're either about what's right, you're about against what's wrong, and you got to take a position. Just simple as that. And that's what it's come down to right now. You got to take a position. And you're going to either be on the side of what's right, or you're going to be on the side of what's wrong. You got to take a position. And that's what is happening in the world right now.
That's where I believe defunding police and defunding the DOC should come in until they can prove themselves, until they're proven themselves worthy. Right now, the unions with the law enforcement and the DOC, the unions are so powerful that even the legislative members, politicians can't even come up against them. They need to defund. They need to start bring some of this funding down and use it for long-term residential treatment programs rather than funding unions, and that's basically what they're doing. And these unions are protecting the bad ones.
That's right. Just because they're a member of the union, if you're a member of the union and you break the law, the union is going to get you a lawyer and support you. But that's going to change. It's a matter of time, but that's going to change. You know, God is going to make sure. You know, one thing that I believe, and it helps me in my work, I don't believe that you can commit a wrong in this world and don't pay for it. I don't believe that. You're going to pay for it
one way
in
or
your
the other.
Grave, or you're going to pay for it in this life. You're going to pay for it. And the only way you don't pay for it, you ask God for forgiveness, and you seek forgiveness, and you work with trying to change the bad into the good. If you mistreat an inmate, the police officers that's shooting these people, that's committing these wrong acts, you see right now they're being caught. They don't have to be caught, but they're being caught. They're being filmed. Somebody is, every time you go out in the public and you commit a bad act, somebody is there with a camera. You don't even expect them to be there. They're there with a camera filming you, taking pictures of you. And you think you got away with something? 2 or 3 days later, your picture's all over the news. Somebody filmed you. And you didn't think they were filming you. You didn't think there was nobody around, but somebody is there. That's the work of the Creator. That's the work of God, making sure that you pay for what you do. When you do something wrong, you got to pay for it. It's simple as that. And as soon as these police, who are good police, as soon as they realize that the bad ones are making their life bad, soon as correction officers, the good ones, realize that the bad ones are making their job hard, they're going to speak up.
Exactly.
And it takes a man, you have to put your life on the line. When I say what I say on the radio about gang members, my life is on the line. One of these boys could decide I'm going to kill Shaheed Omar and come and try to find out where I live at and try to kill me. But I'm not worried about that. It don't mean it can't happen, but I don't worry about that. If I worried about that, I wouldn't open my mouth up. But I'm not worried about that because God protects me. It's simple as that. And I believe that. I believe that as long as I'm doing what's right and I'm living one way, I'm not living two ways, I'm not behind my closed doors, I'm not living like a thief. I'm not living like somebody that's doing something wrong, and then I come out in the public and try to act like I'm living righteous. As long as I'm living one life, you know, that I believe that God is going to protect me, God is going to be merciful to me, and forgive me for things I've done wrong in my life, and protect me. And because of that protection, I'm not afraid to come out and say the things that I say and do the things that I do. I'm not afraid. In the letter that I wrote to the police chief, we got a new black police chief in this town. We had one before. I met with him back in 2005, black police chief. I met with him. And we sat at the table. And he asked me, he said, son, he said, who you think you are? I told him, I said, I pay taxes. I'm a citizen. I pay taxes. I said, that's who I think I am. And I'm here today to tell you that your police officers are out in the street, and if they abuse the citizens, I'm speaking out against them, and I'm not afraid. When I looked at that, he looked at me and he smiled. He knew he had a man sitting in his office that wasn't afraid to come up to speak. And it's simple as that. You know, I live in the city, and I'm a citizen of the city. I pay taxes in the city, and when things are done wrong in the city, by whoever they're done wrong by, I have to speak out against it. It's simple as that. You know, so these young boys around here with these guns, killing people, joining gangs, I'm speaking out against them. I don't care. I'll speak out against them.
I wish more people.
My son was locked up. Listen to this, Leona. When my son was locked up in prison, my son just did 18 years. He's been out 3 years now. When he was locked up, he was at Red Onion, Waters Ridge. He was at the prison. I made a public statement, and I told Secretary of Public Safety, his name was John, what is his last name? He was John Marshall. He was the brother of Thurgood Marshall, first black Supreme Court justice. He was his brother. I told him, I said, if them police officers, not police officers, if them correction officers put their hands on my child like they put their hands on other inmates, if they put their hands on my child, I'm going to put my hands on somebody. Simple as that. I made that statement. My son was at Red Onion at the time. When I called John Moss and told him that, transferred my son the next day. He transferred my child the next day. And I made that statement, and I meant it, because some letters I was getting from inmates and the letters describing the abuse that they was suffering under, I know what nowhere in the world that my son was going to call me or write me a letter and tell me about officers abusing him, and I wasn't going to do nothing. There was just no way it was going to happen. I wasn't going to do nothing. I would have to do something. I mean, you get a letter from a boy 21 years old, 22 years old, and he's talking about officers abusing him. You get a letter like that from your own child. Something you got to do. I had a plan. Thank God I never had to put it into action, but I had a plan of what I was going to do. I might have ended up on death row, but I had a plan. And if I could get parents, other parents, to take position that I took in Virginia, a lot of this abuse against prisoners wouldn't happen. It takes somebody to stand up. I mean, and if you're a male, if you got a son locked up, you have to take a position that nobody's going to abuse your child. And if your child does something wrong, you got to pay a penalty. But at the same time, what they call excessive force, it takes place.
I'd like to bring up
two things. The only kind of force to take place is one that officers have to defend themselves against inmates beating them up. And there are some inmates that will beat officers up. I don't agree with them. I tell them they ain't got no right to beat no officer up unless you're protecting yourself. You just jump on the officer because he's a correctional officer and beat him up. You can't do that. That's wrong. You can't do that.
You mentioned, and I want to bring this up because you mentioned if they messed up, you know, they're in prison because they did something wrong. But when you think about all the people that have gone to prison that were innocent, that were killed in prison, or that were executed because people in the communities wanted the death penalty so bad that they voted mm-hmm. for it. Do you realize mm-hmm. those people that executed these people, they're all murderers. Not only the ones
that's
that
right.
executed, the ones that voted for the death penalty. They're all mm-hmm. murderers because innocent
that's
blood
right.
was shed because of them. So when they talk
right.
about, especially Christians that say, you know, all we need to do is pray. No, that's not all we need to do is pray, because we
all
were brought
right.
into this world. We saw for ourselves. We witnessed for ourselves the purpose of being here, to love your brothers and sisters, to help one
that's
another,
right.
to love your neighbors.
That's right.
When they say neighbors in the Bible, it doesn't mean the person next door to you. It means your neighbors throughout
right.
the world. So these people
that's
talk
right.
about wrongdoing. They talk about prisoners when they need to look at themselves. Another thing I
that's
wanted
right.
to say real quick. There was a prisoner, and I know this has happened to many, many prisoners, who was on a block where a fight broke out. They wanted the prisoner that was not even involved to go into the office and talk with these people about what they saw. Because
mm-hmm.
that prisoner did not want to get involved, because he had nothing to do with it and he didn't want to get involved, he didn't want to
mm-hmm.
be, as they call, a snitch, they wrote him
mm-hmm.
up two occasions. They have not even given that prisoner a chance to go before whoever they're supposed to go before about those
mm-hmm.
write-ups. But instead,
mm-hmm.
they have that person on a restrictive block. This hasn't happened to just one prisoner. It's happened to a lot. They should
that's
not
right.
make people talk about something they had nothing to do with or didn't see anything, instead of
that's
pushing
right.
them to do something like that. And again,
that's right.
people need to get more involved, because they're all murderers. Look at Moses.
That's
I say
right.
this all the time. Moses killed, and God used him in a big way. King David, all these, the Saul, who later became the apostle. People need to realize, if they're not going to do anything to help resolve the issue, they're part of the problem.
That's right. And they're going to pay. I mean, you got an individual, and if you are involved in wrongdoing, no matter how it is, you got to pay. Those people that's involved in voting for electric chair for somebody that you don't even know, you gotta pay. You gotta pay whatever the price is. You gotta pay. It's simple as you don't get away. You don't get away. They're not gonna get away. They're not gonna get away. You gotta pay. They gotta pay.
One way or another.
Everybody has to take, has to pay the price for living. And whatever your position is in this life, you got to pay for it. If it's wrong, you got to pay. You got to pay as an individual. You have to pay. Simple as that. So the wrong folks, the police that are abusing these people, the ones that are standing by and watching the police abuse their citizens, if they don't speak up, they got to pay. It's simple as that. Now, it's different in the prison system because you can't nobody's be able to make you testify in a situation where you don't want to testify. You shouldn't have to do that. You shouldn't have to testify. Especially when you putting your life on the line, you shouldn't be made to give no testimony. That should be something that's given freely. You shouldn't be made to do that because your life is put on the line.
Then you have these people these officials that target prisoners. They target prisoners because of connections, who they know, and who out there in the communities are trying to target them or want them targeted. There's a lot of people who have caused the prisoner or prisoners to stumble, and those very people are the same ones that have connections inside the prisons and other places where they continuously want to make that person suffer. I'm going to tell you, there's lawyers too, and I'm going to mention his name is Norman Zalkind. He's a lawyer right from Boston. He is as corrupt as they can come, because I pay that man one time $4,500 to go in and visit with the prisoner for an hour. But you know what? These lawyers have a way of getting around things, because they come up with emailing one another, and they're charging all these hundreds of dollars to email one another. What's her name? Kelly. Elizabeth Kelly from Spokane, Washington, another one. You know, and I said one of these days we need to get a list of all these lawyers who are corrupt, you know, who are connected, and who will just take the money from prisoners and their loved ones and their family members and their friends and take advantage of it and do nothing. These are things that happen.
They gotta pay too. Trust me, Leona, they gotta pay too. You can't whatever your profession is, you're a judge, lawyer, prosecutor, when you abuse that profession and you mistreat people, you got to pay. I don't believe there's no way in the world you leave out this world and you don't pay. God is going to punish you. You take $4,500 from a citizen to do something and you don't do what you said you're going to do, or what you do doesn't help the prisoner, and you just taking money, you got to pay. You gotta pay. You don't get away. You gotta pay. There ain't no getaway. You gotta pay. So the person who took that money from you, they didn't do what they're supposed to do. They didn't help you. They gotta pay. It's simple that they gotta pay a price. It's simple as that.
Eventually, all this is resolved. But Shahid, we got about another minute and a half. I want to have you back on the show. I want to have you back on the show again, because there's a lot that you bring up, and it's really important to get it out to the public. But I also want people to call in the next time to ask questions. You bring anyone on, if you want to bring on guests with you, Shahid, just let me know. I'll send them invites as well. But I want to have you back on in about 2 or 3 weeks. The next couple
sounds
of weeks,
good to me.
But maybe 3 weeks from today, we'll have you back on again. And I
that
really enjoy
good.
Having you on. Again, say any last minute things to the audience, please do.
Well, I want you to know, who's ever listening, that I love you. If you have any concerns or want to help me in it, my number is 540-309-2473. My email address is shahidomar69@yahoo.com. I'm right here in Virginia, and I'm good. I'm not begging for no help. I'm good. Allah sends me all the help that I need. I'm good, you know, and I'm not afraid to do what I'm doing. And if you have a prisoner in some kin to you in another state, they need some help, write me, call me. I help them too. And I can help because I can write. And officers, wardens, commissioners, they are here from me.
Trust me, they'll hear from me. I'll write them and let them know whatever they're doing. I will help the prisoner. If you got a prisoner, some kin to you, mama, daddy, cousin, uncle, sister, brother, they're being mistreated in the prison, write me. Give me a call. Let me know what's happening, and I will contact the prison officers and let them know this inmate is being mistreated.
Thank you so much, Saheed. I really appreciate you. And I want to have you back on in a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, because this question, having your master's degree in criminal justice, there's some questions too. I have some volunteers. I'd like to have them listen and maybe even come on the show and ask you questions about some of the things they should be doing when they make calls.
I'll be available. Let me know.
Thank you so much. Now signing off, everyone. Again, please join us in a few weeks. I will let everyone know when it's going to be on and call in, ask questions, make comments, or whatever. Thank you again, and we are now ending this episode. Bye-bye. Thank you so much, Saheed.
Bye-bye.